The following programming is sponsored by the Museum of Sports. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Peasley Media Group.
It had been 20 years since the Eagles had won a championship. That joyous day at Franklin Field had long since faded into years of cruel jokes, dashed hopes, and empty Januaries. But in 1980, the long wait ended.
Of us is a walking museum of sports, from that first ball game with your parents to maybe getting that nervous, sweaty autograph to maybe even taking your own kids to their very first game. It's the feeling we all get that brings us back to our own personal Philly Field of Dreams. And the Museum of Sports show is on the air and ready to go there with you. I'm Doug Scheimel, our show dedicated to sports memories, memorabilia, and the museum that's going to capture it all right here in Philadelphia. We're live on the Talk 860 and Museum of Sports Facebook pages, so take a look. Museum of Sports show brought to you every week by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. Joining me, as always, every week from his sports cave in Villanova, he is our guide and mentor, Comcast Spectacor legend, founding vice president of the Philadelphia Flyers and creator of the Museum of Sports, and author of the book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Ladies and gentlemen, Philadelphia's Greatest Showman, Mr. Lou Scheinfeld. Hiya, Lou.
I'm sad, of course, as most baseball fans are. But I'm not the type of guy to say I told you so. But I told you
told
so.
You so.
I told you. I told everybody, starting with the All-Star game break, they didn't look good. They haven't looked good. My wife said to me, since when did you become negative? I said, I'm not negative. I'm being realistic. There's a trend here, and it's not trending up. Sorry to say, said the same thing about the Eagles last year. Sorry to say, I'm a big fan of every sports team in Philadelphia, but I'm disappointed.
Yeah, it was a lackluster performance, no fire, no guts, no nothing. Hey, coming up today, as more Eagles and NFL players go down with concussions, ghosts of CTE, the concussion syndrome, seems to be haunting players from the 1980 Eagles Super Bowl team. The Philadelphia Inquirer's amazing reporter David Gambacorta is going to be joining us to talk about what he's found in his unsettling series of investigative pieces. Also today, he has sculpted a life-size, or wants to sculpt a life-size statue of Pete Rose's fabled dive into home plate, and he wants to bring it to the Museum of Sports. Artist Jack Bellis is going to be joining us to talk about his dream project. And our king of sports collectibles is here to look at what is hot and what's affordable in the sports collectible and memorabilia market, and how you can get a sneak peek at the Depatche memorabilia collection that's going to be our partner in the Museum of Sports down at the Philly Sports Complex. Nick Depatche Jr. is here. But up first, now that the Phillies, Lou, as you had said, have eliminated themselves from the playoffs, our man on the street, Lou Scheinfeld, he's got a couple of problems with Major League Baseball now that the Phillies are safely out of contention.
Well, I'll start with the ad on the helmet, the batting helmet ad for Strauss. I guess that was Levi Strauss jeans. Every major league team had to, that was in the playoffs, of course. You don't have to wear it if you're not playing, but maybe you do. The league is tough on this stuff. They wear the Strauss. It wasn't subtle. It was there, Strauss. And it's a whole fashion thing. I mean, what about the cute little ads in the back of the mound? What about all the ads behind home plate? You can hardly tell the batter from the ball from anything. Yeah. And they're starting to look like NASCAR. They got a whoosh on their jerseys. And on the back of their pants, they have a whoosh. I don't know if you've ever noticed that. And they have other stuff. It's everywhere. At least, I'm sorry the Phillies are not going to continue in the playoffs. I'll miss that. But I won't miss looking at the Asplundh ad that is stretched across the entire outfield every 20 feet. I remember when the Phillies moved to the Vet, and Bill Giles wanted to get rid of those billboards that were out in Connie Mack Stadium, and they did it very tastefully. Well, now it's wall to wall, and it's deck to deck from the ground up. Okay. Yeah. My other feeling is, and I'm in a good mood, as good as could be expected right now. My other is with all the advanced analytics statistics they're jamming down our throat. I understand batting average. Apparently, that's not important anymore, batting average. 300 means nothing. 250 means something if you have a good launch angle. Or if you're a home run, had an apex, which means a high point, an acme, being the sports dynamics 140 feet. That's what means around 14 stories. I just remember when we were happy for 125 years saying there's a towering fly, a tower. I love that term. And you visualized, you don't need to know it was 140.3. And oh, here's the best stat I've got for you. A halfback last week ran 21.8 miles an hour, the fastest recorded by a player carrying a ball. They're doing miles per hour now on players. Now, what about all the splits they call it, the splits? What you do home or away? What about BABIP, B-A-P-I-P, batting average on balls in play? What about DER, defensive efficiency rating? How about DRS, defensive runs scored? I don't know what that means. I don't care. How about WIN, win? That I would like to see. WIN, ERA. Yeah. Thank gosh they still got that. How about FIP, fielding independent pitching? What could that possibly mean? On and on. How about ISO? And it's not the Apple operating system. It's it's isolated power. And that's what the Phillies have. Their power was isolated. Finally, I got one, an advanced statistic, an OPS. I'll stop with that one. On-base slugging. How do you slug once you're on base unless you're punching the second baseman? Doug, help me out here, please.
Yeah. Well, can you imagine, you know, in the old days, a radio play-by-play call, you know, we've got an apex apex fly ball deep to center field, traveling at roughly 98 to 102 miles an hour. And of course, the wind is coming out of the west, and it's going to be probably drifting, and it may not make it to the wall. You know,
oh my God, you got it. That's beautiful. That sounded like Mel Allen to me.
Yeah, it would just take the romance out of the game, the suspense out of the game.
Well, so, romance, I see it's more of a divorce.
Yeah,
between the players.
Well, speaking
and the
of suspense and the romance of the game, as you know, I'm a big tennis player and tennis fan. One of the big three that dominated pro tennis over the last 20 plus years. Has announced he is going to retire. Rafael Nadal, the Spaniard, has decided after Davis Cup play this fall that he will retire completely from pro tennis. And that's sort of sad because not that there aren't a bunch of great, you know, U.S. prospects and international prospects lined up and that, you know, have been sort of attempting to pick off various Grand Slams and other tournaments. But there just seemed to be it was sort of like the last gasp of like dynastic tennis. Rafa Nadal, Roger Federer, to some extent, Andy Murray. And you've still got Novak Djokovic playing, although he is very badly banged up. Also a guy who is in his almost 40 window bracket there. It just takes away some of that, I don't want to say predictability to the sport, but they were great emissaries of you know the craft, and now you've got a lot of very technically proficient players who are coming up, and we'll just see what blossoms, if a dominance comes out of it or not. Certainly on the women's side with Iga Swiatek from Poland, but I just don't know if we're going to see that dominance because there's so much talent on the male side. And here again, pickleball will overtake every public tennis sport in the United States. Because the popularity of tennis in the U.S. has always been driven by the success of an American men's tennis player. And they've
I'm just watching reruns of McEnroe and Connors. That's to me, that was two heavyweights slugging it out.
Oh, yeah. So those are some of the most classic matches. Hey, we want to make sure our viewers and listeners go to themuseumofsports.org to make a tax-deductible contribution today so you can be part of Philly's new sports shrine that we're in the process of negotiating down at the Philadelphia Sports Complex. We're going to have some cool swag when you donate. And don't forget to buy Lou's book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. A portion of the proceeds goes to the museum. You can get that and a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. When we return, concussion syndrome is haunting the 1980 Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl team. We'll be talking that with the Philadelphia Inquirer's David Gambacorda when the Museum of Sports show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a couple of minutes.
It was 1967, and Philadelphia was in a rut. The economy, riots, Vietnam. That is, until the Broad Street Bullies rallied the region's spirits and brought more than 2 million into the streets to celebrate. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's candid memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. You'll love the inside stories about Frank Sinatra, Ed Snyder, Bernie Parent, Frank Rizzo, Elvis Presley, the 76ers, Mick Jagger, Electric Factory Concerts, and Kate Smith. And you'll find out how Lou Scheinfeld helped Ed Snyder rescue the Flyers and, against all odds, got the Spectrum built. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed first edition copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. The book the Philadelphia Inquirer called a fascinating and hilarious read. Blades, Bands, and Ballers. An ode to a building that truly rocked. The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas Depatche, MD, FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Did you miss a recent Museum of Sports show? No worries. You can see or listen to any of our previous shows on the Museum of Sports website or on our Facebook page. You'll love our lineup of great guests, including Merrill Reese, the Eagles' Vi Sekahema, Bill Berge and Kevin Riley, Flyers broadcasters Jim Jackson and Steve Coates, and the Phillies' always colorful Larry Boa. The Museum of Sports is on the air and Facebook, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860 and Facebook Live.
Eagles 20, Cowboys 7. The triumph of the underdog. The comeback from hard times. Yes, the long wait was finally over. The Eagles were champions.
Back on the Museum of Sports show here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live, brought to you by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld. Our first guest, last time we had him on, was just after an incredible series he had done that helped expose a potential link between Veterans Stadium's notorious AstroTurf and some of the brain cancer deaths of famous Philadelphia Phillies. And his latest ongoing series in the Philadelphia Inquirer, if you haven't seen it, you need to go back and look at it, is that how concussion syndrome, sort of known as CTE, is haunting the 1980 Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl team, and how their former coach, Dick Vermeil, is trying to get them help and money from the NFL's big settlement pool. A big Museum of Sports show. Welcome back to the Philadelphia Inquirer's investigative reporter, David Gambacorda. David, how are you?
Doing okay, Doug. Thank you for having me back again.
Absolutely. Yeah, when I saw that, we used some of that artwork in our promo that I guess maybe your house artist had done. It really is kind of striking because that was such a glory period of which Lou was a big part back then. Chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE, as it's come to be known, it's the result of that constant impact of pro football. It could be just making a tackle, being tackled, head hitting the ground, helmet to helmet, and it's the mini concussions, the full-blown concussions, you know, in the 1980s Super Bowl team, and I think as pointed out in your piece, you know, it was just considered getting your bell rung or having your clock cleaned. What was it that kind of catalyzed your interest in even taking a look at this situation? Because we kind of park everybody like Vermeil and Jaworski and Sizemore and Wilbert Montgomery up on a shelf in our little pantheon and just sort of forget about it. But how did it get on your radar?
Yeah. Actually last year while I was working on one of the turf follow-up stories, I had talked to a former Eagle who mentioned that he thought the concussion settlement program that the NFL has established to pay former players, he felt that there were problems with it and that was worth looking into. And so that kind of sent me down a very long rabbit hole of researching the litigation that started, over a decade ago and the settlement program itself. And then it became a question of, how to tell that story. And one of the first people that I spoke with was Dick Vermeil, because I just thought, maybe he would have an interesting perspective. More likely, I was expecting that he might not want to have that conversation.
Interesting. I wondered about that, too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, his life is intertwined with football. And, I could imagine a scenario where he and plenty of other folks would feel reticent to start to have that conversation. And it was the exact opposite. He was enormously engaged on the topic already, and had for a number of years been working behind the scenes to try to help a lot of his former players. And he was really, a huge conduit to putting me in touch with a lot of the 1980 guys.
You had talked to, I think you said in your article, you talked about about a dozen of the 22 starters from the Super Bowl. Wilbert Montgomery, offensive lineman Jerry Sizemore, who's been a good friend of our show, who's been on many times, and he's somewhat of an eccentric character. And I always wondered, and I think I asked him half jokingly one time, is that CTE setting in? And he said, I have no doubt about some of the stuff I say and do. It's some of it was wacky Jerry and some of it is late onset something. And yeah, it was very interesting how candid he was about that, going all the way back to childhood, just that constant impact and collision to his retiring day. He said, as you pointed out in your piece, it was sad to talk to former teammates because you would end up crying because you couldn't remember certain things. That had to be pretty jarring for you as you went through that roster of players.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have to give those guys credit because they were all incredibly open about not only the illnesses that they're experiencing, but how they sort of look back and take stock on their life and realize how this happened. And Jerry was a perfect example of that. I mean, he really, the things that he said were just so emotional and so powerful. The other element of it that I found interesting is for the era that these guys were in today, they do feel a little forgotten. It was a long time ago. And, the NFL at that time was not the $13 billion juggernaut that it is today. And these guys really kind of helped build the league up and build it into what it is today. They're now in their 70s and dealing with some really horrible health problems. And they're just, they kind of feel cast aside. So.
And that's kind of where Dick Vermeil came in. I think you and I were talking pre-show. He's a very raw, emotional player, was evidenced all the time on the field in press conferences and interviews. But he was the one, as you point out in your piece, that he turned sort of this ragtag mix of rookies and kind of middle of the road players into a championship team. And he sort of kind of, to what extent do you think he felt responsible for really just creating a lot of that collision that is big, baked into the thing, but his practices were hell.
Yeah. He was pretty candid about that. That he, looking back, like I said, those were notorious practices, 2.5 hours in the morning, 2.5 hours in the afternoon, full contact, all through training camp and, during the week as well, during the season. So, I mean, that is on the one hand, how he was able to help turn that team around. But, you know, looking back on it, he sees the connection, you know, that constant collision, the physical sort of damage that they were all sustaining. And I think it's a real credit to Vermeil that he's honest about that. I can't think of, you know, a more sort of honest broker than Dick Vermeil for professional football. I don't think anybody questions his heart or his motive or anything like that. And so I think for him to come out and say, this program is well-intentioned, but it's not operating right and it's not taking care of these guys and that's wrong, I think it's pretty powerful. And I think the response that he's gotten is also interesting.
Yeah. The original documentary based on the death of Mike Webster and sort of the dominoes that started falling from their League of Denial, Lou, from a front office standpoint, I think Paul Tagliabue, you know, not long after this was when journalists would approach him, Dave quotes it in his piece. He said, well, this is really a journalism issue. I guess much in the same way that Watergate was a journalism issue. Lou, from a front office standpoint, this not really on the radar. It wasn't top of mind.
No, it wasn't. But neither was the fact that it was a disaster on other fronts. I mean, guys were tearing up their knees.
Yep.
The Phillies had to change their shoes in July because it was burning their cleats.
Yeah.
They put a thermometer. It was 120 degrees or whatever it was. It was burning right through their soles of their shoes. And then players can tell you that their careers ended. A game was canceled. A preseason game with Baltimore, I believe it was canceled because the pitcher's mound wasn't sunk down enough, and there was a ridge. And
it was not a high priority thing. I mean,
no, it wasn't.
And paid to play.
They should have, and they changed it four or five times to another carpet, and it never got any better. The whole thing began because of Houston. They couldn't have grass with a closed roof. So they invented AstroTurf, named after the Astrodome. David, in case you didn't know that, of course. it was a disaster from A to Z.
But certainly concussions, just not there. You know, it was just bell rung, clock clean, off you go, a little bit of smelling salts, and back on the field you went. What, Dave, as you started looking at, and I guess the Eagles sort of chronology was very similar to what we saw in the rest of the league with some of the other cases you cite, with the suicides of Junior Seau, Andre Waters, the death of, we mentioned, Hall of Fame center for the Steelers, Mike Webster, that really sort of triggered the, I'm going to donate, when I die, I want to donate my brain for examination. That really is what turned it into something that could be identified and perhaps linked back.
Yeah. I think with so far, there's only been a handful of Eagles that have gone so far as to donate their brains. It really wasn't until about 2008 that idea was coming up. And that was around the time that Boston University created their CTE program.
Yeah.
And so at this point they've studied, it's well north of 300 brains of former NFL players, and it's about 92% have had CTE. But one of the former Eagles who felt really strongly about donation was Frank LeMaster, the linebacker. And he and Dick Vermeil were really close, and Dick visited him just a few days before he passed away. And then Frank's wife, Mary Lou LeMaster, said, you know, she wasn't sure how to proceed, and Vermeil connected her with Boston University.
Right.
And, you know, they found that Frank had the highest level of CTE that you could have. One of the researchers told Mary Lou that they didn't even need to put his brain under a microscope. That's how visible it was.
And what's been happening? I know one of the areas that Vermeil has been helpful in is trying to secure money and get some of these claims paid. And a lot of what these former Eagles are told is, well, if you've got private insurance, if you got insurance, we'll cover whatever your insurance doesn't cover. And that can be pretty substantial.
Well, they, when this litigation happened, I guess it was back in 2011, it was the start of it. The end result was the NFL agreed to create a program that would last for 65 years. And players who had retired, prior to 2014, could submit to be paid, provided that they met certain criteria that this program has. And so you have guys like Wilbert Montgomery, who has Parkinson's disease and a form of dementia. But navigating the process to get approved for payment is very difficult. And a lot of guys, Wilbert included, were denied, you know, some cases multiple times before they could finally get paid. And so that's where I think, you know, Vermeil has seen this going on and feels, oh, this is wrong. These guys aren't making this up. You know, their problems are real and self-evident. And it could take years before they actually see money. And so when you're talking about guys that are in their 70s now and in declining health, you know, time is of the essence. So he's been calling for, you know, different ways of streamlining this program and making it operate more efficiently.
Yeah. Well, and as you point out in your piece, you know, even Dick Vermeil, Hall of Fame status, you know, just good guy sort of reputation, even he has trouble getting his calls returned. And all the while, as Jerry Sizemore says, the CTE is, you know, basically killing everybody from the inside out.
Yeah.
David Gambacorta really with the Philadelphia Inquirer, you're amazing. When can, do you have another installment coming, or it just kind of, it comes when it comes in?
Yeah, I'm working on right now one that I think will go maybe tomorrow or Monday about Josh Allen, the Buffalo Bills quarterback, who sustained a really scary looking head injury just the last weekend, around how players are evaluated on the sidelines. But we have you know, quite a few more installments lined up for down the road, so keep at it.
So that's something you got to look out for out there. Philadelphia Inquirer, pieces on CTE, Eagles, and sort of the state of the industry in the NFL. David Gambacorta, as always, we love having you on. Keep us posted when the time is right. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Excellent. Good seeing you, David. Coming up here on the Museum of Sports Show, the man who wants to preserve Pete Rose's mythical moment in bronze when the Museum of Sports Show continues here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. Back in a moment.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers, now available. The Museum of Sports Show is presented by Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas Depatche is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat shortness of breath, brain fog, chronic disease, autonomic dysfunction syndrome, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Nicholas Depatche, MD, FACC, at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Who remembers the Philadelphia A's or the Warriors or the old arena at 46th and Market? We do, and that's why the Museum of Sports is being planned for Philadelphia. What's it like to face a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, ride your bike up the Maniunk Wall, or drive in the Pocono 500? We've got rare items from Babe Ruth, Mike Schmidt, Chuck Bednar, Bernie Perron, and Wilt Chamberlain. The Museum of Sports is on the air, and you can join the fun every Thursday, 4 to 5 p.m. on WWDB 860.
Every night I went out there, you motivated me to play hard. You motivated me to get base hits.
Honoring a legend today, a packed Great American Ballpark came together for a very special unveiling. Thousands gathered to witness the unveiling of the Hit King statue today.
And we're back on the Museum of Sports Show, sponsored by the Depatche Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. I'm Doug Scheimel, along with Lou Scheinfeld. Our next guest, you see him there in the Zoom box. He has had a dream for more than two decades to somehow preserve Pete Rose's mythical dive into home plate in bronze. He has created castings of his vision. I think he even gave one to Pete Rose himself a few years back. And now, could a bigger than life-size statue be coming potentially to the Museum of Sports at our hoped-for new home at the South Philly Sports Complex? Well, here to talk about his dream and his campaign to make it come true, a big Museum of Sports show welcome to sculptor Jack Bellis. Jack, how are you?
Great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. So tell us a little bit, you know, what was it about that historic image? Were you more a fan of Pete Rose or that image, or just trying to somehow, like, you know, memorialize him? How did this all start?
Right. Well, it was a product of the 80s, 1982, 83. I started doing different artworks, and the Flyers' victory was still visible in the rearview mirror. The Phillies had just won. The Sixers were 83, I guess, right? So I started having a vision of Pete Rose, Dr. J, and Bobby Clark as a triumvirate that I called Courage, Skill, and Determination. And I made clay sculptures of all three. I showed Bobby Clark his at a practice one time, but nothing ever came of it because I was an amateur coming out of nowhere. I never did anything more with the Dr. J sculpture. It wasn't one of my greatest works, but the Pete Rose one's the only one that survives to this day. I brought it to the Philadelphia Sports Hall of Fame at their first ever induction meeting and sold two castings there. One, I had to go to Ken Avalon, the president and creator, I guess, of the Philly Sports Hall of Fame, and say, Ken, I have good news and bad news. I sold two sculptures, but one of them to your wife. But it turned out it was a good move because the Philadelphia Sports Hall of Fame has, you know, one of these five castings in its archives now. So it was an artistic vision, but, you know, out of my adoration, I guess, for Pete's sheer willpower, right?
Absolutely. We're looking, if those of you are watching on Facebook Live, we've got Jack Ballas's website up, and it is, this is one of the castings, correct, Jack, correct, that we're looking at?
It's a stone, not bronze. It's desktop size, about 20 inches, but it weighs as much or more than bronze would. And it's cantilevered in the back. It's an angular home plate, which I think is pretty cool if it were made into heroic size outside a stadium. I could imagine pushing that base up, but, you know, maybe 5 feet off the ground.
Right.
I would love that. It would be great if it were publicly supported and we can put all the donors' names, engrave them in the base in proportion to the size of their contribution. That would be awesome. And I've always thought about, you know, where could it be in Philly? I understand that, you know, maybe the stadiums aren't the best prospect anymore, but a business that's heavily involved in sports or an organization, whether the Sports Hall of Fame or Sports Museum, either one could be a great place for it, maybe even a prominent business near the stadiums.
Hey, Jack, it's Lou Scheinfeld. Love what you're doing. What did Pete Rose say when you gave him it?
So I showed it to him in clay 30 years ago or something like that. Maybe it was 25 in the 90s in King of Prussia when he was doing the signing. And it wasn't a good place to have a conversation because I was just one of the people in line for signatures. So he liked it, but that was about it. And then I showed it to him about 10 years ago in Vegas. I went back to him just an iPad, and he really liked it. He was able to be more talkative there. I could see there was genuine appreciation.
Wow. And
he liked it better than the Bob Boone scene where he's catching the ball out of Bob Boone's hand.
Hey, Jack, tell us about that shirt you're wearing.
So my father played in the 1945 Rose Bowl for Tennessee. This will be an 80-year-old shirt in a couple months, right?
So is that game worn?
game worn. This is a silk, or I think silk one. So it was in California, obviously, the Rose Bowl. My sister has one that's heavier. That must be wool. So that would be an East Coast jersey. And one sold on Golden Auctions. And we believe it was one that he gave as a gift to an actor named Peter Mark Richman. And when he passed away, he probably gave it to his, you know, his family said, what is this? Realized it might have some value. And Golden got $460 for it. If I share my screen, I can show you the web page, but it's not live anymore since it was a long time ago, the auction.
So that's a Rose, stand up there. If you can just kind of give us a little fashion show there, Jack. Now, what is it? What's on the back? Is a number on the back too? Very nice.
Yep.
It's got a couple of rips in it. Yeah, good.
Yeah, that's that's pretty damn cool. Have you ever had like a formal appraisal of that one done?
Well, I think it's it's a good question whether it's worth any more than the 460 that someone got for the heavier. And we could see on the Golden page, the photos show that the letters are fuzzy. So you can tell that it's the East Coast colder weather version with the heavier fabric. So, you know, might the Rose Bowl get it some more money? Not enough that it's going to make any difference, you know, to what I do with it. A great thing to do would be to have it on display, whether at Tennessee or in a Philly organization.
What position did your dad play and how did they do in that game?
Tight end. They were undefeated prior to the Rose Bowl, but went up against the juggernaut and they lost. I think it might have, I don't remember the score, but it was interesting because he was a northern boy playing in Tennessee in 1945. You know, fill in the blanks.
Jeez.
So you know what we'll have to do, Lou, and we've done this, and Lou knows what I'm going to say. Usually we've got somebody who's got some kind of quirky memorabilia or collectible. If you can hang with us after the break coming up here in about 3 or 4 minutes, we may ask our King of Sports collectibles to, we might have you do a quick little fashion show down the runway there. Okay. And have him do a spot appraisal if you're willing.
Sure.
And we won't, do we tell Nick Jr. what the benchmark is for the woolen one at 460, or we just keep our mouths?
No, we don't, shouldn't say that. What year was that sold?
I can,
I mean, how long ago? 10, 20 years, 15 years?
Let's see if it's in a screen capture here.
Because prices have gone up. People are buying stuff like crazy.
What am I looking
but
at?
He would, well, that's pretty cool. And just the fact that there's the family connection to it, I think is incredibly cool.
Check it out during the break.
I was not able to see a date easily, but I might be able to find one on a screen capture.
Hey, I got to ask you, Jack, about on the, I want to go back and reshare the, your webpage there. We've looked at the clay one. We've looked at the cement version of Rose sliding headfirst into home.
Yeah. Scroll down, I'll talk you through the rest of them. There's a detail of the back showing his number 14. And the photograph from the newspaper below it was from Philadelphia Journal. And they just had a beautiful front cover picture that I said, that's the pose I'm trying to do in every regard.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You heard that clip coming out of the break. That was from a news clip of Cincinnati, 7 years ago or something like that, when they dedicated their version of the base, you know, the head first base slide. And I like yours better because there's more action and drama captured in it than the other one that they did at Cincinnati. No slight to their sculptor and what they've done there. But this one, you really do capture the action of the moment in Rose's face that the other one is, it could have been anybody's face in the Cincinnati statue.
Yeah. Look, the other guy is just a, you know, world-class sculptor who of some renown, but I'm delighted to hear your reaction is what I think that it's more dramatic. And you see the scrunched up face in one of the next photos.
Yeah.
And you know what? So I made five castings over the years. And it wasn't until Pete died and I got online a couple weeks ago that I had any idea that they actually went forward and made a statue in Cincinnati.
Yeah, and you know, it's an okay statue. I mean, I'm looking at it from a 7-year-old news clip. You know, it looks fine, but it almost seems like, you know, because some of those moments were made here, not there, that Philly and the Phillies need to have a version of it that we can call our own.
Yeah. I had given up all hope, frankly. And then, you know, not to say Pete's passing in and of itself, you know, is something that would have, you know, made people more forgiving or open to the possibility, but to see that they right. surmounted that, you know, resistance in Cincinnati already has given me more hope that it might happen here.
How much would you have to raise to complete it?
I got an estimate, and it's on that webpage. I got an estimate several years ago that it would cost about $60,000 to do what they call the mold and the casting. I have a feeling that doesn't include making the model 10 feet tall or 10, you know, that heroic size model.
Exactly.
And what I think that means is I would have to, there would be more money to have someone enlarge it. I think there's such a thing as a 3D pantograph these days that does that enlargement. And then the detail level would have to be fixed up, enhanced a little bit. So rough number, $100,000 to be, you know, pretty quick about it.
Excellent. Excellent. And folks can kind of visit your work at, I was trying to find the website. It's
jackbellis.com.
Yeah. Jack, JACKBELLIS.com. Hey, Jack, you're going to stick with us through the break and you want to do a quick spot appraisal with our King of Sports Collectibles for that, that wearable you got on.
That'd be awesome.
Excellent. Hey, he's the man who wants to sculpt Pete Rose dive for all eternity. Jack Bellis is going to hang with us through the break for a spot appraisal for his father's 1945 Rose Bowl game-worn shirt that he is wearing as we speak. If you're watching on Facebook Live, you can see him. Hey, we'll be back with our King of Sports Collectibles, Nick DiPaccio Jr., when the Museum of Sports Show continues right here on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. We'll be right back.
Can you imagine Philadelphia without the Broad Street Bullies or its fabled Spectrum Arena? Well, it almost happened until Lou Scheinfeld and Ed Snyder, otherwise known as Flash and Cash, teamed up to rescue the Flyers and got America's Showplace up and running. It was 1967, and the world was in a whole different place. You can read all about it in Lou Scheinfeld's heartfelt memoir, Blades, Bands, and Ballers. Get a signed copy at themuseumofsports.org. Themuseumofsports.org. Blades, Bands, and Ballers, now available. The Museum of Sports Show is presented by DiPaccio Franklin Cardiovascular and Autonomic Center. Dr. Nicholas DiPaccio is a caring specialist who uses natural antioxidants, nitric oxide, and anti-inflammatory agents to treat heart disease, hypertension, palpitations, and more with minimum medicines. To learn more, please call Dr. Nicholas DiPaccio, MD-FACC, author of 4 books and over 100 articles and abstracts at 856-589-6034. That's 856-589-6034.
Hey, buddy, what can I get you? How about the ultimate sports memorabilia basement?
We're back here on the Museum of Sports Show on Talk 860 and Facebook Live. I'm Doug Scheimel along with Lou Scheinfeld. Museum of Sports Show brought to you by the DiPaccio Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are specialists in non-invasive treatment, and there he is with his 3D logo coming right at you. He is our King of Sports Collectibles, whose family has the world's largest and most valuable sports memorabilia collection worth more than $50 million, and they are our proud partner in the Museum of Sports that's finalizing a home in the new South Philly Sports Complex. Nick DiPaccio Jr., everybody.
How's it going, guys?
Doing really well. We've got another one of those blindside spot appraisals for you. Nick, that's sculptor Jack Bellis, whose dream is to do a Pete Rose home plate dive sculpture and maybe locate it down there at the Museum of Sports. But he has got a wearable item on. Jack, if you want to give Nick a quick description of whose it was and what it is.
Yeah, so this is from the 1945 Rose Bowl. My father wore it for Tennessee. They were 7-0 during the season, but went up against a juggernaut Was it USC? Yeah, I think it was USC.
I think so.
And they lost that game. My father has had three of these jerseys that we know of. My sister has one that's a heavier weight than the one I have. This, I think, is silk, and definitely not wool. It's like silk lettering. I know the difference because my sister's is a heavier weight fabric and puffier. Even on a web page that I saw a picture of one that someone else had, it shows heavier weight fabric. So apparently East Coast and West Coast jerseys, as near as, you know, warm weather and cold weather jerseys. He was a tight end, and he could do a great Archie Bunker talk of, these guys these days don't even know what it means that we play 60 minutes.
So what do you, Nick, something like that, that's kind of a kind of a neat family tie-in there. All the little rips and tears are part of the actual game wearing, apparently, correct, Jack?
So there, yes, none of the holes are from damage afterwards.
Yeah, like Lou playing in a Bednarik jersey in his backyard football game. Not that that actually happened. So, Nick, talk a little bit about what something like that could go for.
Well, I mean, he did say there were some in auction, so I would have to go by what it auctioned off for last time. I see there's a picture, a screenshot of it. However, I don't think it says what it went for here.
Well, we can't tell you that. That would
yeah.
Be,
we don't want to give you a benchmark. Yeah. You got to do it in a vacuum. Come on.
Oh my goodness.
But it's not signed, and that says a lot,
signed,
right?
Correct.
Not signed. But there are only a couple. You said three of them in existence.
As far as I know, yeah, three.
Three. I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with your father's career, but what position? What did he do?
He was a tight end. He never played beyond Tennessee undergrad and Temple. When he went to dental school, he played for Temple.
He actually played as a dental student.
Yeah, but that was it. And it was interesting because it was 1945. So, side story, he was probably a sub, right, for maybe the first stringers who were at the front.
Who were in fighting.
Yep.
Do you know if he scored in that game? Because that might make it worth a little.
I'm sorry, I don't.
Okay.
I would say the vintage aspect of it, everything that's older, like we talk about, it goes up in value. 1945, it's a beautiful looking jersey. You could see the game use on it. I would say it could go for 10 to 15,000.
Whoa.
There we go. Those are the reactions
shocking.
Jack.
I mean, this though is one of the harder ones for me to gauge. I'm curious to know what the other one did go for.
You don't want to know.
Now this was, and also how many years ago was that too? That was an interesting thing. That was the woolen East Coast one, right? That your sister had.
As far as I know, yeah, and it was $460.
And that was how many years ago?
Yeah. I can try to figure that out. I'll certainly let you know after the show what I find. I could try to look now, but
well, if for some reason my assessment is close, then you could make a good profit on that.
Yeah.
Guess who sold it, Nick?
Oh, I see it was Golden Auctions.
Yeah, right. Golden Auctions, right?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. No, okay. I mean, I think the vintage aspect of it, I think it really adds a lot of value.
Yeah, 460. That sounds like someone made a piker's bid. No offense to your golden.
Even if I'm off, and it's only 2,500. Let's say,
yeah,
that's still a good. And I think 2,500 would probably be a good estimate that it's worth. Like that 460 for to turn it into 2,500. That's a pretty good deal.
That's not bad. That's so good money.
I got a little bit of evidence. I did a save previously of the webpage. I see that I saved it in 2018. And there is no date in the content of the webpage, the golden auction page I saved, but it has a lot number of eight. Well, no, lot number is not going to have any tie to a date.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's still, I would let circa it, you know, what, 6 years ago, six, 7 years ago, maybe.
I, either way, I think $460, whoever bought that was, it's a steal.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Now, the difference is, you know, we have reason to believe this was a 45 Rose Bowl, whereas the other two were East Coast heavier weight jerseys, you know, which would argue that they weren't used in California. But that's just surmise.
That's interesting.
And a big thing today, I mean, is photo matching. So if you could photo match them, that's huge. If you have
a photo of him in the game.
Like dad on the team pick or something like that, that may exist even in Tennessee's archives.
Right. There was one Rose Bowl where we think we saw a video of 1945.
Oh, it's, you know, it's out there somewhere, Jack. It's just a matter of finding. Maybe I'll hunt that down.
Photo matching is I can't overstate the importance of photo matching in game use uniforms.
Yeah. Right. All right. So we gave you your heart attack of the afternoon, Jack. Well, I hope that helped.
I have to say I was off, but even if it's 1,000 to 2,500, I would say, I mean, it's definitely worth more than 460.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I agree. Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. Jack Bellis, sculptor extraordinaire, keep us posted, and we'll get you back on when the time's right.
Thank you, guys. Pleasure.
All right, man. Thanks so much.
Nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you.
Big Nick, what's the latest with the museum, the collection, the tours?
We're still doing the tours by appointment, and you could call the numbers on our website, I believe, on depachemuseum.org. So you could do private tours. When we're going to grand open to like the public, I think we're doing that in the spring. Not, I think, I know we're doing that in the spring because we want to allow enough time to plan. We're going to try to get athletes there and different figures, sports, figures, radio personalities. So, I think we're going to do a grand opening. That's going to be, we want it to have a wow factor.
Yeah.
Have you, picked up any artifacts lately?
Lately, I can't think of any lately.
I know what was happening when we had Bruce Shaw on. He said you guys, and we may have talked about this last time you were on, was you guys are still unboxing and uncrating stuff that has not been inventoried before. That's how you found some of the boxing trunks that went up on the Depache Museum page. So you're still discovering stuff that's in your own collection, basically.
I mean, there's thousands and thousands of artifacts. So, I mean, we have a rudimentary inventory, but I mean, to take inventory of everything, it takes a lot of time. And thankfully to Bruce and Michael Goldis, they're on top of it right now. We have other hands that we've had help us in the past. So building an inventory, it's very important for museum archives, the archives. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, it's the beauty of having a collection that is that massive. When you would go to a Depache Museum or eventually the Museum of Sports at the sports complex, it's never going to be a one and done visit. You will never say I've been there, done that, because Nick, as you say, there's so much material that will be rotated in and out of an exhibition hall.
Absolutely. And you see that, I mean, you've seen the way it's packed to the brim as it is, and there's more. So like we could have two of those buildings and fill it up probably.
Well, that's what I tell people when they say, well, how are you going to get people to come back to your museum? I said, Dr. Tapachi's family has enough to fill five museums.
Exactly.
So we will be changing things.
Yeah. And it'll ebb and flow with the sports season. It'll ebb and flow with, you know, who's up and down in the business. There'll be all sorts of reasons that you will move stuff from the storeroom out to the floor and vice versa. So And you can find out all about it. If you want to schedule a little sneak preview, you can go to depachemuseum.org. You can schedule a private tour down there at the museum in the Sewell, New Jersey. That is our time for this week. We want to thank all of our guests, the Philadelphia Inquirer's reporter David Gambacorta, Pete Rose sculptor Jack Bellis, and of course, you cannot forget our amazing Nick DePaccia Jr., who gave another guest a heart attack with a spot appraisal. And don't forget to buy Lou's recent book, Blades, Bands, and Ballers, How Flash and Cash Rescued the Flyers and Created Philadelphia's Greatest Showplace. Go to themuseumofsports.org and get an autographed copy from Lou. And a portion of the proceeds goes to benefit the Museum of Sports. The Museum of Sports show brought to you by the DePaccia Franklin Cardiovascular Center. They are the specialists in non-invasive treatment. For Lou Scheinfeld, Nick DePaccia Jr., I'm Doug Scheimel, reminding you of what our good friend Carly Simon always says, Lou.
These are the good old days.
They are indeed. Have a great weekend, everybody. Good show, guys.
Happy weekend, even though the Phillies lost.
Yeah, I know. Well, they eliminated themselves from that.
Yeah, good. Well put.